pipes. I know that, Percy. But are you sure that's the only reason? I'm not doing it to help my father. He doesn't care about me. I don't care about him. Grover gazed down from his tree branch. Look, Percy, I'm not as smart as Annabeth. I'm not as brave as you, but I'm pretty good at reading emotions. You're glad your dad is alive. You feel good that he's claimed you, and part of you wants to make him proud. That's why you mailed Medusa's head to Olympus. You wanted him to notice what you'd done. Yeah? Well, maybe satyr emotions work differently than human emotions. Because you're wrong. I don't care what he thinks. Grover pulled his feet up onto the branch. Okay, Percy. Whatever. Besides, I haven't done anything worth bragging about. We barely got out of New York, and we're stuck here with no money and no way west. Grover looked at the night sky, like he was thinking about that problem. How about I take first watch, huh? You get some sleep. I wanted to protest, but he started to play Mozart, soft and sweet, and I turned away, my eyes stinging. After a few bars of Piano Concerto No. 12, I was asleep. In my dreams, I stood in a dark cavern before a gaping pit. Gray mist creatures churned all around me, whispering rags of smoke that I somehow knew were the spirits of the dead. They tugged at my clothes, trying to pull me back, but I felt compelled to walk forward to the very edge of the chasm. Looking down made me dizzy. The pit yawned so wide and was so completely black, I knew it must be bottomless. Yet, I had a feeling that something was trying to rise from the abyss, something huge and evil.
The little hero,
an amused voice echoed far down in the darkness.
Too weak, too young, but perhaps you will do.
The voice felt ancient, cold and heavy. It wrapped around me like sheets of lead.
They have misled you, boy,
it said.
Barter with me. I will give you what you want.
A shimmering image hovered over the void. My mother, frozen at the moment she dissolved in a shower of gold. Her face was distorted with pain, as if the Minotaur were still squeezing her neck. Her eyes looked directly at me, pleading, Go! I tried to cry out, but my voice wouldn't work. Cold laughter echoed from the chasm. An invisible force pulled me forward. It would drag me into the pit unless I stood firm.
Help me rise, boy.
The voice became hungrier.
Bring me the bolt. Strike a blow against the treacherous gods.
The spirits of the dead whispered around me.
No! Wake!
The image of my mother began to fade. The thing in the pit tightened its unseen grip around me. I realized it wasn't interested in pulling me in. It was using me to pull itself out.
Good, it murmured. Good. Wake,
the dead whispered.
Wake!
Someone was shaking me. My eyes opened, and it was daylight. Well, Annabeth said, the zombie lives. I was trembling from the dream. I could still feel the grip of the chasm monster around my chest. How long was I asleep?
Long enough for me to cook breakfast.
Annabeth tossed me a bag of nacho-flavored corn chips from Auntie M's snack bar. And Grover went exploring. Look, he found a friend. My eyes had trouble focusing. Grover was sitting cross-legged on a blanket with something fuzzy in his lap, a dirty, unnaturally pink stuffed animal. No, it wasn't a stuffed animal. It was a pink poodle. The poodle yapped at me suspiciously. Grover said, No, he's not. I blinked. Are you talking to that thing? The poodle growled. This thing, Grover warned, is our ticket west. Be nice to him. You can talk to animals? Grover ignored the question. Percy,
Meet Gladiola. Gladiola, Percy.
I stared at Annabeth, figuring she'd crack up at this practical joke they were playing on me, but she looked deadly serious.
I'm not saying hello to a pink poodle, I said. Forget it.
Percy, Annabeth said. I said hello to the poodle. You say hello to the poodle. The poodle growled.
I said hello to the poodle.
Grover explained that he'd come across Gladiola in the woods, and they'd struck up a conversation. The poodle had run away from a rich local family who'd posted a $200 reward for his return. Gladiola didn't really want to go back to his family, but he was willing to if it meant helping Grover.
How does Gladiola know about the reward? I asked.
He read the signs, Grover said.
Duh. Of course, I said. Silly me.
So we turn in Gladiola, Annabeth explained in her best strategy voice. We get money and we buy tickets to Los Angeles. Simple.
I thought about my dream, the whispering voices of the dead, the thing in the chasm, and my mother's face, shimmering as it dissolved into gold. All that might be waiting for me in the West.
Not another bus, I said warily.
No,
Annabeth agreed. She pointed downhill toward train tracks I hadn't been able to see last night in the dark.
There's an Amtrak station half a mile that way. According to Gladiola, the westbound train leaves at noon.
Chapter 13. I plunge to my death. We spent 2 days on the Amtrak train, heading west through hills, over rivers, past amber waves of grain. We weren't attacked once, but I didn't relax. I felt that we were traveling around in a display case, being watched from above, and maybe from below, that something was waiting for the right opportunity. I tried to keep a low profile because my name and picture were splattered over the front pages of several East Coast newspapers. The Trenton Register News showed a photo taken by a tourist as I got off the Greyhound bus. I had a wild look in my eyes. My sword was a metallic blur in my hands. It might have been a baseball bat or a lacrosse stick. The picture's caption read,
12-year-old Percy Jackson, wanted for questioning on the Long Island disappearance of his mother 2 weeks ago, is shown here fleeing from the bus where he accosted several elderly female passengers. The bus exploded on an East New Jersey roadside shortly after Jackson fled the scene. Based on eyewitness accounts, police believe the boy may be traveling with two teenage accomplices. His stepfather, Gabe Ugliano, has offered a cash reward for information leading to his capture.
Don't worry, Annabeth told me. Mortal police could never find us. But she didn't sound so sure. The rest of the day, I spent alternately pacing the length of the train, because I had a really hard time sitting still or looking out the windows. Once, I spotted a family of centaurs galloping across a wheat field, bows at the ready, as they hunted lunch. The little boy centaur, who was the size of a second grader on a pony, caught my eye and waved. I looked around the passenger car, but nobody else had noticed. The adult riders all had their faces buried in laptop computers or magazines. Another time, toward evening, I saw something huge moving through the woods. I could have sworn it was a lion, except that lions don't live wild in America, and this thing was the size of a Hummer. Its fur glinted gold in the evening light, then it leaped through the trees and was gone. Our reward money for returning Gladiola the poodle had only been enough to purchase tickets as far as Denver. We couldn't get berths in the sleeper car, so we dozed in our seats. My neck got stiff. I tried not to drool in my sleep, since Annabeth was sitting right next to me. Grover kept snoring and bleeding and waking me up. Once, he shuffled around and his fake foot fell off. Annabeth and I had to stick it back on before any of the other passengers noticed.
So, Annabeth asked me, once we'd gotten Grover's sneaker readjusted. Who wants your help?
What do you mean?
When you were asleep just now, you mumbled, I won't help you. Who were you dreaming about?
I was reluctant to say anything. It was the second time I'd dreamed about the evil voice from the pit. But it bothered me so much, I finally told her.
Annabeth was quiet for a long time.
That doesn't sound like Hades. He always appears on a black throne, and he never laughs.
He offered my mother in trade. Who else could do that?
I guess if he meant help me rise from the underworld, if he wants war with the Olympians. But why ask you to bring him the Master Bolt if he already has it?
I shook my head, wishing I knew the answer. I thought about what Grover had told me, that the Furies on the bus seemed to have been looking for something.
Where is it? Where?
Maybe Grover sensed my emotions. He snorted in his sleep, muttered something about vegetables, and turned his head. Annabeth readjusted his cap so it covered his horns.
Percy, you can't barter with Hades. You know that, right? He's deceitful, heartless, and greedy. I don't care if his kindly ones weren't as aggressive this time.
This time? I asked. You mean you've run into them before?
Her hand crept up to her necklace. She fingered a glazed white bead painted with the image of a pine tree, one of her clay end-of-summer tokens.
Let's just say I've got no love for the Lord of the Dead. You can't be tempted to make a deal for your mom.
What would you do if it was your dad?
That's easy, she said.
I'd leave him to rot.
You're not serious.
Annabeth's gray eyes fixed on me. She wore the same expression she'd worn in the woods at camp the moment she drew her sword against the hellhound.
My dad's resented me since the day I was born, Percy, she said. He never wanted a baby. When he got me, he asked Athena to take me back and raise me on Olympus because he was too busy with his work. She wasn't happy about that. She told him heroes had to be raised by their mortal parent.
But how? I mean, I guess you weren't born in a hospital.
I appeared on my father's doorstep in a golden cradle, carried down from Olympus by Zephyr, the West Wind. You think my dad would remember that as a miracle, right? Like, maybe he'd take some digital photos or something. But he always talked about my arrival as if it were the most inconvenient thing that ever happened to him. When I was 5, he got married and totally forgot about Athena. He got a regular mortal wife and had 2 regular mortal kids and tried to pretend I didn't exist.
I stared out the train window. The lights of a sleeping town were drifting by. I wanted to make Annabeth feel better, but I didn't know how.
My mom married a really awful guy, I told her. Grover said she did it to protect me, to hide me in the scent of a human family. Maybe that's what your dad was thinking.
Annabeth kept worrying at her necklace. She was pinching the gold collar ring that hung with the beads. It occurred to me that the ring must be her father's. I wondered why she wore it if she hated him so much.
He doesn't care about me, she said. His wife, my stepmom, treated me like a freak. She wouldn't let me play with their children. My dad went along with her. Whenever something dangerous happened, you know, something with monsters, they would both look at me resentfully, like, how dare you put our family at risk? Finally, I took the hint. I wasn't wanted. I ran away.
How old were you?
Same age as when I started camp. 7.
But you couldn't have gotten all the way to Half-Blood Hill by yourself.
Not alone, no. Athena watched over me, guided me toward help. I made a couple of unexpected friends who took care of me, for a short time anyway.
I wanted to ask what happened, but Annabeth seemed lost in sad memories. So I listened to the sound of Grover snoring and gazed out the train windows as the dark fields of Ohio raced by. Toward the end of our second day on the train, June 13th, 8 days before the summer solstice, we passed through some golden hills and over the Mississippi River into St. Louis.
Annabeth craned her neck to see the gateway arch, which looked to me like a huge shopping bag handle stuck on the city.
"I want to do that," she sighed.
"What?"
I asked.
"Build something like that. You ever see the Parthenon, Percy?"
"Only in pictures."
"Someday, I'm going to see it in person. I'm going to build the greatest monument to the gods ever. Something that'll last 1,000 years.
I laughed.
"You, an architect?"
I don't know why, but I found it funny. Just the idea of Annabeth trying to sit quietly and draw all day.
Her cheeks flushed.
"Yes, an architect. Athena expects her children to create things, not just tear them down like a certain god of earthquakes I could mention."
I watched the churning brown water of the Mississippi below.
"Sorry," Annabeth said. "That was mean."
"Can't we work together a little?" I pleaded. "I mean, didn't Athena and Poseidon ever cooperate?"
Annabeth had to think about it.
"I guess. The chariot," she said tentatively. "My mom invented it, but Poseidon created horses out of the crests of waves, so they had to work together to make it complete."
"Then we can cooperate too, right?"
We rode into the city, Annabeth watching as the arch disappeared behind a hotel.
"I suppose," she said at last.
We pulled into the Amtrak station downtown. The intercom told us we'd have a 3-hour layover before departing for Denver. Grover stretched. Before he was even fully awake, he said,
"Food."
"Come on, goat boy," Annabeth said. "Sightseeing."
"Sightseeing? The Gateway Arch," she said.
"This may be my only chance to ride to the top. Are you coming or not?"
Grover and I exchanged looks. I wanted to say no, but I figured that if Annabeth was going, we couldn't very well let her go alone.
Grover shrugged. "As long as there's a snack bar without monsters."
The arch was about 1 mile from the train station. Late in the day, the lines to get in weren't that long. We threaded our way through the underground museum, looking at covered wagons and other junk from the 1800s. It wasn't all that thrilling, but Annabeth kept telling us interesting facts about how the arch was built, and Grover kept passing me jelly beans, so I was okay. I kept looking around, though, at the other people in line.
"You smell anything?"
I murmured to Grover. He took his nose out of the jelly bean bag long enough to sniff.
"Underground," he said distastefully. "Underground air always smells like monsters. Probably doesn't mean anything."
But something felt wrong to me. I had a feeling we shouldn't be here.
"Guys," I said, "you know the gods' symbols of power?"
Annabeth had been in the middle of reading about the construction equipment used to build the arch, but she looked over.
"Yeah?"
"Well, Hades..." Grover cleared his throat.
"We're in a public place? You mean our friend downstairs?"
Right, I said. "Our friend way downstairs. Doesn't he have a hat like Annabeth's?"
"You mean the Helm of Darkness?"
Annabeth said.
"Yeah, that's his symbol of power. I saw it next to his seat during the Winter Solstice Council meeting."
"He was there?" I asked. She nodded. "It's the only time he's allowed to visit Olympus, the darkest day of the year. But his helm is a lot more powerful than my invisibility hat, if what I've heard is true."
"It allows him to become darkness," Grover confirmed. "He can melt into shadow or pass through walls. He can't be touched or seen or heard, and he can radiate fear so intense it can drive you insane or stop your heart. Why do you think all rational creatures fear the dark?"
"But then, how do we know he's not here right now watching us?" I asked. Annabeth and Grover exchanged looks.
"We don't," Grover said.
"Thanks, that makes me feel a lot better," I said.
"Got any blue jelly beans left?"
I'd almost mastered my jumpy nerves when I saw the tiny little elevator car we were going to ride to the top of the arch, and I knew I was in trouble, I hate confined places. They make me nuts.
We got shoehorned into the car with this big fat lady and her dog, a chihuahua with a rhinestone collar. I figured maybe the dog was a seeing-eye chihuahua because none of the guards said a word about it. We started going up. Inside the arch, I'd never been in an elevator that went in a curve, and my stomach wasn't too happy about it.
"No parents?" the fat lady asked us. She had beady eyes, pointy, coffee-stained teeth, a floppy denim hat, and a denim dress that bulged so much she looked like a blue jean blimp.
"They're below," Annabeth told her, scared of heights.
"Oh, the poor darlings."
The chihuahua growled. The woman said,
"Now, now, sonny, behave."
The dog had beady eyes like its owner, intelligent and vicious. I said, "Sonny, is that his name?"
"No,"
the lady told me. She smiled, as if that cleared everything up. At the top of the arch, the observation deck reminded me of a tin can with carpeting. Rows of tiny windows looked out over the city on one side and the river on the other. The view was okay, but if there's anything I like less than a confined space, it's a confined space 500 feet in the air. I was ready to go pretty quick. Annabeth kept talking about structural supports and how she would have made the windows bigger and designed a see-through floor. She probably could have stayed up there for hours, but luckily for me, the park ranger announced that the observation deck would be closing in a few minutes. I steered Grover and Annabeth toward the exit, loaded them into the elevator, and I was about to get in myself when I realized there were already two other tourists inside. No room for me. The park ranger said,
"Next car, sir."
"We'll get out," Annabeth said. "We'll wait with you." But that was going to mess everybody up and take even more time. So I said,
"No, it's okay. I'll see you guys at the bottom."
Grover and Annabeth both looked nervous, but they let the elevator door slide shut. Their car disappeared down the ramp. Now, the only people left on the observation deck were me, a little boy with his parents, the park ranger, and the fat lady with her chihuahua. I smiled uneasily at the fat lady. She smiled back, her forked tongue flickering between her teeth. Wait a minute. Forked tongue? Before I could decide if I'd really seen that, her chihuahua jumped down and started yapping at me.
"Now, now, sonny," the lady said. "Does this look like a good time? We have all these nice people here."
"Doggy,"
said the little boy.
"Look, a doggy."
His parents pulled him back. The chihuahua bared his teeth at me, foam dripping from his black lips.
"Well, son," the fat lady sighed, "if you insist."
Ice started forming in my stomach. Did you just call that chihuahua your son?
"Chimera, dear," the fat lady corrected. "Not a chihuahua. It's an easy mistake to make."
She rolled up her denim sleeves, revealing that the skin of her arms was scaly and green. When she smiled, I saw that her teeth were fangs. The pupils of her eyes were sideways slits, like a reptile's. The chihuahua barked louder, and with each bark, it grew, first to the size of a Doberman, then to a lion. The bark became a roar. The little boy screamed. His parents pulled him back toward the exit, straight into the park ranger, who stood, paralyzed, gaping at the monster. The chimera was now so tall, its back rubbed against the roof. It had the head of a lion with a blood-caked mane, the body and hooves of a giant goat, and a serpent for a tail, a 10-foot-long diamondback growing right out of its shaggy behind. The rhinestone dog collar still hung around its neck, and the plate-sized dog tag was now easy to read. Chimera, rabid, fire-breathing, poisonous. If found, please call Tartarus, extension 954. I realized I hadn't even uncapped my sword. My hands were numb. I was 10 feet away from the chimera's bloody maw,
and I knew as soon as I moved, the creature would lunge. The snake lady made a hissing noise that might have been laughter.
Be honored, Percy Jackson. Lord Zeus rarely allows me to test a hero with one of my brood, for I am the mother of monsters, the terrible Echidna.
I stared at her. All I could think to say was, isn't that a kind of anteater? She howled, her reptilian face turning brown and green with rage.
I hate it when people say that. I hate Australia. Naming that ridiculous animal after me. For that, Percy Jackson, my son shall destroy you.
The chimera charged, its lion teeth gnashing. I managed to leap aside and dodge the bite. I ended up next to the family and the park ranger, who were all screaming now, trying to pry open the emergency exit doors. I couldn't let them get hurt. I uncapped my sword, ran to the other side of the deck and yelled, "Hey, Chihuahua!" The chimera turned faster than I would have thought possible. Before I could swing my sword, it opened its mouth, emitting a stench like the world's largest barbecue pit, and shot a column of flame straight at me. I dove through the explosion. The carpet burst into flames. The heat was so intense, it seared off my eyebrows. Where I'd been standing a moment before was a ragged hole in the side of the arch with melted metal steaming around the edges. Great, I thought. We just blowtorched a national monument. Riptide was now a shining bronze blade in my hands. And as the chimera turned, I slashed at its neck. That was my fatal mistake. The blade sparked harmlessly off the dog collar. I tried to regain my balance, but I was so worried about defending myself against the fiery lion's mouth, I completely forgot about the serpent tail until it whipped around and sank its fangs into my calf. My whole leg was on fire. I tried to jab Riptide into the chimera's mouth, but the serpent tail wrapped around my ankles and pulled me off balance, and my blade flew out of my hand, spinning out of the hole in the arch and down toward the Mississippi River. I managed to get to my feet, but I knew I had lost. I was weaponless. I could feel deadly poison racing up to my chest. I remembered Chiron saying that Anaklismos would always return to me, but there was no pen in my pocket. Maybe it had fallen too far away. Maybe it only returned when it was in pen form. I didn't know, and I wasn't going to live long enough to figure it out. I backed into the hole in the wall. The chimera advanced, growling, smoke curling from its lips. The snake lady, Echidna, cackled.
They don't make heroes like they used to, eh, son?
The monster growled. It seemed in no hurry to finish me off now that I was beaten. I glanced at the park ranger and the family. The little boy was hiding behind his father's legs. I had to protect these people. I couldn't just die. I tried to think, but my whole body was on fire. My head felt dizzy. I had no sword. I was facing a massive, fire-breathing monster and its mother, and I was scared. There was no place else to go, so I stepped to the edge of the hole. Far, far below, the river glittered. If I died, would the monsters go away? Would they leave the humans alone?
If you are the son of Poseidon, Echidna hissed. You would not fear water. Jump, Percy Jackson. Show me that water will not harm you. Jump and retrieve your sword. Prove your bloodline.
Yeah, right, I thought. I had read somewhere that jumping into water from a couple of stories up was like jumping onto solid asphalt. From here, I'd splatter on impact. The chimera's mouth glowed red, heating up for another blast.
You have no faith, Echidna told me. You do not trust the gods. I cannot blame you, little coward. Better you die now. The gods are faithless. The poison is in your heart.
She was right. I was dying. I could feel my breath slowing down. Nobody could save me, not even the gods. I backed up and looked down at the water. I remember the warm glow of my father's smile when I was a baby. He must have seen me. He must have visited me when I was in my cradle. I remember the swirling green trident that appeared above my head the night of Capture the Flag, when Poseidon had claimed me as his son. But this wasn't the sea. This was the Mississippi, dead center of the USA. There was no sea god here.
"Die, faithless one," Echidna rasped, and the Chimera sent a column of flame toward my face. "Father, help me," I prayed. I turned and jumped, my clothes on fire, poison coursing through my veins. I plummeted toward the river.
Chapter 14. I Become a Known Fugitive. I'd love to tell you I had some deep revelation on my way down, that I came to terms with my own mortality, laughed in the face of death, etc. The truth? My only thought was, The river raced toward me at the speed of a truck. Wind ripped the breath from my lungs. Steeples and skyscrapers and bridges tumbled in and out of my vision. And then, flaboom! A whiteout of bubbles. I sank through the murk, sure that I was about to end up embedded in 100 feet of mud and lost forever. But my impact with the water hadn't hurt. I was falling slowly now, bubbles trickling up through my fingers. I settled on the river bottom soundlessly. A catfish the size of my stepfather lurched away into the gloom. Clouds of silt and disgusting garbage, beer bottles, old shoes, plastic bags, swirled up all around me. At that point, I realized a few things. First, I had not been flattened into a pancake. I had not been barbecued. I couldn't even feel the Chimera poison boiling in my veins anymore. I was alive, which was good. Second realization? I wasn't wet. I mean, I could feel the coolness of the water. I could see where the fire on my clothes had been quenched. But when I touched my own shirt, it felt perfectly dry. I looked at the garbage floating by and snatched an old cigarette lighter. No way, I thought. I flicked the lighter. It sparked. A tiny flame appeared, right there at the bottom of the Mississippi. I grabbed a soggy hamburger wrapper out of the current, and immediately the paper turned dry. I lit it with no problem. As soon as I let it go, the flame sputtered out. The wrapper turned back into a slimy rag. Weird. But the strangest thought occurred to me only last. I was breathing. I was underwater, and I was breathing normally. I stood up, thigh deep in mud. My legs felt shaky. My hands trembled. I should have been dead. The fact that I wasn't seemed like, well, a miracle. I imagined a woman's voice, a voice that sounded a bit like my mother. "Percy, what do you say?" "Thanks." Underwater, I sounded like I did on recordings, like a much older kid. "Thank you, Father." No response. Just the dark drift of garbage downriver, the enormous catfish gliding by, the flash of sunset on the water's surface far above, turning everything the color of butterscotch. Why had Poseidon saved me? The more I thought about it, the more ashamed I felt. So I'd gotten lucky a few times before. Against a thing like the Chimera, I had never stood a chance. Those poor people in the arch were probably toast. I couldn't protect them. I was no hero. Maybe I should just stay down here with the catfish, join the bottom feeders. Bump, bump, bump. A riverboat's paddle wheel churned above me, swirling the silt around. There, not 5 feet in front of me, was my sword, its gleaming bronze hilt sticking up in the mud. I heard that woman's voice again. "Percy, take the sword. Your father believes in you." This time, I knew the voice wasn't in my head. I wasn't imagining it. Her words seemed to come from everywhere, rippling through the water like dolphin sonar. "Where are you?" I called aloud. Then, through the gloom, I saw her. A woman, the color of the water, a ghost in the current, floating just above the sword. She had long, billowing hair, and her eyes, barely visible, were green like mine. A lump formed in my throat. I said, "Mom?" "No, child, only a messenger, though your mother's fate is not as hopeless as you believe. Go to the beach in Santa Monica." "What?" "It is your father's will. Before you descend into the underworld, you must go to Santa Monica. Please, Percy, I cannot stay long. The river here is too foul for my presence."
But I was sure this woman was my mother, or a vision of her anyway. "Who? How did you?" There was so much I wanted to ask. The words jammed up in my throat.
"I cannot stay, brave one," the woman said. She reached out, and I felt the current brush my face like a caress. "You must go to Santa Monica. And Percy, do not trust the gifts."
Her voice faded.
"Gifts?"
I asked. "What gifts? Wait." She made one more attempt to speak, but the sound was gone. Her image melted away. If it was my mother, I had lost her again. I felt like drowning myself. The only problem, I was immune to drowning.
"Your father believes in you," she had said.
She also called me brave, unless she was talking to the catfish. I waded toward Riptide and grabbed it by the hilt. The chimera might still be up there with its snaky fat mother waiting to finish me off. At the very least, the mortal police would be arriving, trying to figure out who had blown a hole in the arch. If they found me, they'd have some questions. I capped my sword, stuck the ballpoint pen in my pocket. "Thank you, Father," I said again to the dark water. Then I kicked up through the muck and swam for the surface. I came ashore next to a floating McDonald's. A block away, every emergency vehicle in St. Louis was surrounding the arch. Police helicopters circled overhead. The crowd of onlookers reminded me of Times Square on New Year's Eve. A little girl said,
"Mama, that boy walked out of the river."
"That's nice, dear," her mother said, craning her neck to watch the ambulances.
"But he's dry."
"That's nice, dear." A news lady was talking for the camera. "Probably not a terrorist attack, we're told, but it's still very early in the investigation. The damage, as you can see, is very serious. We're trying to get to some of the survivors to question them about eyewitness reports of someone falling from the arch." Survivors. I felt a surge of relief. Maybe the park ranger and that family made it out safely. I hoped Annabeth and Grover were okay. I tried to push through the crowd to see what was going on inside the police line.
"An adolescent boy," another reporter was saying. "Channel 5 has learned that surveillance cameras show an adolescent boy going wild on the observation deck, somehow setting off this freak explosion. Hard to believe, John, but that's what we're hearing. Again, no confirmed fatalities."
I backed away, trying to keep my head down. I had to go a long way around the police perimeter. Uniformed officers and news reporters were everywhere. I'd almost lost hope of ever finding Annabeth and Grover when a familiar voice bleated, "Percy!" I turned and got tackled by Grover's bear hug, or goat hug. He said, "We thought you'd gone to Hades the hard way." Annabeth stood behind him, trying to look angry, but even she seemed relieved to see me. "We can't leave you alone for 5 minutes. What happened?"
"I sort of fell."
"Percy, 630 feet? Behind us, a cop shouted,
"Gangway!"
The crowd parted, and a couple of paramedics hustled out, rolling a woman on a stretcher. I recognized her immediately as the mother of the little boy who'd been on the observation deck. She was saying,
"And then this huge dog, this huge fire-breathing chihuahua?"
"Okay, ma'am," the paramedic said. "Just calm down. Your family is fine. The medication is starting to kick in."
I'm not crazy. This boy jumped out of the hole and the monster disappeared.
Then she saw me.
There he is. That's the boy.
I turned quickly and pulled Annabeth and Grover after me. We disappeared into the crowd.
What's going on? Annabeth demanded. Was she talking about the Chihuahua on the elevator?
I told them the whole story of the Chimera, Echidna, my high dive act, the underwater lady's message.
Whoa, said Grover. We've got to get you to Santa Monica. You can't ignore a summons from your dad.
Before Annabeth could respond, we passed another reporter doing a news break, and I almost froze in my tracks when he said,
Percy Jackson. That's right, Dan. Channel 12 has learned that the boy who may have caused this explosion fits the description of a young man wanted by authorities for a serious New Jersey bus accident 3 days ago. And the boy is believed to be traveling west. For our viewers at home, here is a photo of Percy Jackson.
We ducked around the news van and slipped into an alley. First things first, I told Grover, we've got to get out of town. Somehow, we made it back to the Amtrak station without getting spotted. We got on board the train just before it pulled out for Denver. The train trundled west as darkness fell, police lights still pulsing against the St. Louis skyline behind us. Chapter 15. A God Buys Us Cheeseburgers. The next afternoon, June 14th, 7 days before the solstice, our train rolled into Denver. We hadn't eaten since the night before in the dining car, somewhere in Kansas. We hadn't taken a shower since Half-Blood Hill, and I was sure that was obvious.
Let's try to contact Chiron, Annabeth said. I want to tell him about your talk with the river spirit.
We can't use phones, right?
I'm not talking about phones.
We wandered through downtown for about half an hour, though I wasn't sure what Annabeth was looking for. The air was dry and hot, which felt weird after the humidity of St. Louis. Everywhere we turned, the Rocky Mountains seemed to be staring at me like a tidal wave about to crash into the city. Finally, we found an empty do-it-yourself car wash. We veered toward the stall farthest from the street, keeping our eyes open for patrol cars. We were three adolescents hanging out at a car wash without a car. Any cop worth his donuts would figure we were up to no good.
What exactly are we doing? I asked as Grover took out the spray gun.
Oh, it's 75 cents, he grumbled. I've only got 2 quarters left. Annabeth?
Don't look at me, she said. The dining car wiped me out.
I fished out my last bit of change and passed Grover a quarter, which left me 2 nickels and 1 drachma from Medusa's place.
Excellent, Grover said. We could do it with a spray bottle, of course, but the connection isn't as good, and my arm gets tired of pumping.
What are you talking about?
He fed in the quarters and set the knob to fine mist.
IMing.
Instant messaging?
Iris messaging, Annabeth corrected. The rainbow goddess Iris carries messages for the gods.
If you know how to ask, and she's not too busy, she'll do the same for half-bloods.
You summon the goddess with a spray gun?
Grover pointed the nozzle in the air, and water hissed out in a thick white mist.
Unless you know an easier way to make a rainbow.
Sure enough, late afternoon light filtered through the vapor and broke into colors. Annabeth held her palm out to me.
Drachma, please.
I handed it over. She raised the coin over her head.
Oh, goddess, accept our offering.
She threw the drachma into the rainbow. It disappeared into a golden shimmer.
Half-Blood Hill, Annabeth requested.
For a moment, nothing happened. Then I was looking through the mist at Strawberry Fields and the Long Island Sound in the distance. We seemed to be on the porch of the big house. Standing with his back to us at the railing was a sandy-haired guy in shorts and an orange tank top. He was holding a bronze sword and seemed to be staring intently at something down in the meadow.
Luke!
I called. He turned, eyes wide. I could swear he was standing 3 feet in front of me through a screen of mist, except I could only see the part of him that appeared in the rainbow.
Percy! His scarred face broke into a grin. Is that Annabeth, too? Thank the gods. Are you guys okay?
We're, fine, Annabeth stammered. She was madly straightening her dirty T-shirt, trying to comb the loose hair out of her face.
We thought Chiron, I mean...
He's down at the cabins.
Luke's smile faded.
We're having some issues with the campers. Listen, is everything cool with you? Is Grover all right?
I'm right here,
Grover called. He held the nozzle out to one side and stepped into Luke's line of vision.
What kind of issues?
Just then, a big Lincoln Continental pulled into the car wash with its stereo turned to maximum hip-hop. As the car slid into the next stall, the bass from the subwoofers vibrated so much it shook the pavement.
Chiron had to... What's that noise?
Luke yelled.
I'll take care of it,
Annabeth yelled back, looking very relieved to have an excuse to get out of sight.
Grover, come on.
What? Grover said, but...
Give Percy the nozzle and come on,
she ordered. Grover muttered something about girls being harder to understand than the Oracle at Delphi. Then he handed me the spray gun and followed Annabeth. I readjusted the hose so I can keep the rainbow going and still see Luke.
Chiron had to break up a fight,
Luke shouted to me over the music.
Things are pretty tense here, Percy. Word leaked out about the Zeus-Poseidon standoff. We're still not sure how. Probably the same scumbag who summoned the Hellhound. Now the campers are starting to take sides. It's shaping up like the Trojan War all over again. Aphrodite, Ares, and Apollo are backing Poseidon, more or less. Athena's backing Zeus.
I shuddered to think that Clarice's cabin would ever be on my dad's side for anything. In the next stall, I heard Annabeth and some guy arguing with each other, then the music's volume decreased drastically.
So, what's your status? Luke asked me. Chiron will be sorry he missed you.
I told him pretty much everything, including my dreams. It felt so good to see him, to feel like I was back at camp even for a few minutes, that I didn't realize how long I had talked until the beeper went off on the spray machine, and I realized I only had one more minute before the water shut off.
I wish I could be there, Luke told me. We can't help much from here, I'm afraid, but listen, it had to be Hades who took the Master Bolt. He was there at Olympus Winter Solstice. I was chaperoning a field trip, and we saw him.
But Chiron said the gods can't take each other's magic items directly.
That's true, Luke said, looking troubled. Still, Hades has the Helm of Darkness. How could anybody else sneak into the throne room and steal the Master Bolt? You'd have to be invisible.
We were both silent, until Luke seemed to realize what he'd said.
Oh, hey, he protested. I didn't mean Annabeth. She and I have known each other forever. She would never... I mean, she's like a little sister to me.
I wondered if Annabeth would like that description. In the stall next to us, the music stopped completely. A man screamed in terror, car doors slammed, and the Lincoln peeled out of the car wash.
You'd better go see what that was, Luke said. Listen, are you wearing the flying shoes? I'll feel better if I know they've done you some good.
Oh, yeah.
I tried not to sound like a guilty liar.
Yeah, they've come in handy.
Really? He grinned. They fit in everything?
The water shut off. The mist started to evaporate.
Well, take care of yourself out there in Denver, Luke called, his voice getting fainter. And tell Grover it'll be better this time. Nobody will get turned into a pine tree if he just...
But the mist was gone, and Luke's image faded to nothing. I was alone in a wet, empty car wash stall. Annabeth and Grover came around the corner laughing, but stopped when they saw my face. Annabeth's smile faded.
What happened, Percy? What did Luke say?
Not much, I lied, my stomach feeling as empty as a big three cabin.
Come on, let's find some dinner.
A few minutes later, we were sitting at a booth in a gleaming chrome diner. All around us, families were eating burgers and drinking malts and sodas. Finally, the waitress came over. She raised her eyebrow skeptically.
Well?
I said, we, want to order dinner?
You kids have money to pay for it?
Grover's lower lip quivered. I was afraid he would start bleeding, or worse, start eating the linoleum. Annabeth looked ready to pass out from hunger. I was trying to think up a sob story for the waitress when a rumble shook the whole building. A motorcycle the size of a baby elephant had pulled up to the curb. All conversation in the diner stopped. The motorcycle's headlight glared red. Its gas tank had flames painted on it. A shotgun holster riveted to either side, complete with shotguns. The seat was leather, but leather that looked like, well, Caucasian human skin. The guy on the bike would have made pro wrestlers run for mama. He was dressed in a red muscle shirt and black jeans and a black leather duster with a hunting knife strapped to his thigh. He wore red wraparound shades, and he had the cruelest, most brutal face I'd ever seen. Handsome, I guess, but wicked, with an oily black crew cut and cheeks that were scarred from many, many fights. The weird thing was, I felt like I'd seen his face somewhere before. He walked into the diner, and a hot, dry wind blew through the place. All the people rose, as if they were hypnotized, but the biker waved his hand dismissively, and they all sat down again. Everybody went back to their conversations. The waitress blinked, as if someone had just pressed the rewind button on her brain. She asked us again, "You kids have money to pay for it?" The biker said, "It's on me." He slid into our booth, which was way too small for him, and crowded Annabeth against the window. He looked up at the waitress who was gaping at him and said, "Are you still here?" He pointed at her, and she stiffened. She turned as if she'd been spun around, then marched back toward the kitchen. The biker looked at me. I couldn't see his eyes behind the red shades, but bad feelings started boiling in my stomach. Anger, resentment, bitterness. I wanted to hit a wall. I wanted to pick a fight with somebody. Who did this guy think he was? He gave me a wicked grin.
"So you're old Seaweed's kid, huh?"
I should have been surprised or scared, but instead I felt like I was looking at my stepdad, Gabe. I wanted to rip this guy's head off. "What's it to you?" Annabeth's eyes flashed me a warning. "Percy, this is..." The biker raised his hand.
"It's okay," he said. "I don't mind a little attitude, long as you remember who's the boss. You know who I am, little cousin?"
Then it struck me why this guy looked familiar. He had the same vicious sneer as some of the kids at Camp Half-Blood, the ones from Cabin 5. "You're Clarice's dad," I said. "Ares, god of war." Ares grinned and took off his shades. Where his eyes should have been, there was only fire, empty sockets, glowing with miniature nuclear explosions.
"That's right, punk. I heard you broke Clarice's spear."
"She was asking for it."
"Probably. That's cool. I don't fight my kids' fights, you know? What I'm here for? I heard you were in town. I got a little proposition for you."
The waitress came back with heaping trays of food. Cheeseburgers, fries, onion rings, and chocolate shakes. Ares handed her a few gold drachmas. She looked nervously at the coins.
"But these aren't..."
Ares pulled out his huge knife and started cleaning his fingernails.
"Problem, sweetheart?"
The waitress swallowed, then left with the gold.
"You can't do that," I told Ares. "You can't just threaten people with a knife."
Ares laughed.
"Are you kidding? I love this country. Best place since Sparta. Don't you carry a weapon, punk? You should. Dangerous world out there, which brings me to my proposition. I need you to do me a favor."
"What favor could I do for a god?"
"Something a god doesn't have time to do himself. It's nothing much. I left my shield at an abandoned water park here in town. I was going on a little date with my girlfriend. We were interrupted. I left my shield behind. I want you to fetch it for me."
"Why don't you go back and get it yourself?" The fire in his eye sockets glowed a little hotter.
Why don't I turn you into a prairie dog and run you over with my Harley? Because I don't feel like it. A god is giving you an opportunity to prove yourself, Percy Jackson. Will you prove yourself a coward?
He leaned forward.
Or maybe you only fight when there's a river to dive into, so your daddy can protect you.
I wanted to punch this guy, but somehow I knew he was waiting for that. Ares's power was causing my anger. He'd love it if I attacked. I didn't want to give him the satisfaction. We're not interested, I said. We've already got a quest. Ares's fiery eyes made me see things I didn't want to see. Blood and smoke and corpses on the battlefield.
I know all about your quest, punk. When that item was first stolen, Zeus sent his best out looking for it. Apollo, Athena, Artemis, and me, naturally. If I couldn't sniff out a weapon that powerful...
He licked his lips as if the very thought of the master bolt made him hungry.
Well, if I couldn't find it, you got no hope. Nevertheless, I'm trying to give you the benefit of a doubt. Your dad and I go way back. After all, I'm the one who told him my suspicions about old corpse breath.
You told him Hades stole the bolt?
Sure. Framing up somebody to start a war? Huh. Oldest trick in the book. I recognized it immediately. In a way, you got me to thank for your little quest.
Thanks, I grumbled.
Hey, I'm a generous guy. Just do my little job, and I'll help you on your way. I'll arrange a ride west for you and your friends.
We're doing fine on our own.
Yeah, right. No money, no wheels, no clue what you're up against. Help me out, and maybe I'll tell you something you need to know. Something about your mom.
My mom? He grinned.
That got your attention. The water park is a mile west on Delancey. You can't miss it. Look for the Tunnel of Love ride.
What interrupted your date? I asked. Something scare you off? Ares bared his teeth, but I'd seen his threatening look before on Clarice. There was something false about it, almost like he was nervous.
You're lucky you met me, punk, and not one of the other Olympians. They're not as forgiving of rudeness as I am. I'll meet you back here when you're done. Don't disappoint me.
After that, I must have fainted or fallen into a trance because when I opened my eyes again, there was no one else in our booth. I might have thought the conversation had been a dream, but Annabeth and Grover's expressions told me otherwise.
Not good, Grover said. Ares sought you out, Percy. This is not good.
I stared out the window. The motorcycle had disappeared. Did Ares really know something about my mom, or was he just playing with me? Now that he was gone, all the anger had drained out of me. I realized Ares must love to mess with people's emotions. That was his power, cranking up the passions so badly they clouded your ability to think.
It's probably some kind of trick, I said. Forget Ares. Let's just go.
We can't, Annabeth said.
Look, I hate Ares as much as anybody, but you don't ignore the gods unless you want serious bad fortune. He wasn't kidding about turning you into a rodent.
I looked down at my cheeseburger, which suddenly didn't seem so appetizing.
Why does he need us?
Maybe it's a problem that requires brains, Annabeth said.
Ares is strength. That's all he has. Even strength has to bow to wisdom sometimes.
But this water park... He acted almost scared. What would make a war god run away like that?
Annabeth and Grover glanced nervously at each other. Annabeth said,
I'm afraid we have to find out.
The sun was sinking behind the mountains by the time we found the water park. Judging from the sign, it once had been called Waterland, but now some of the letters were smashed out so it read Watrad. The main gate was padlocked and topped with barbed wire. Inside, huge dry water slides and tubes and pipes curled everywhere, leading to empty pools. Old tickets and advertisements fluttered around the asphalt. With night coming on, the place looked sad and creepy. If Ares brings his girlfriend here for a date, I said, staring up at the barbed wire, I'd hate to see what she looks like.
Percy, Annabeth warned, be